Welcome to the Beyond Finding Equine podcast. I'm Morgan Stevens, an equine postural and performance practitioner. I created this podcast for other horse enthusiasts to learn and hear about all sides of the equine industry. On this podcast, I'll be interviewing other professionals and getting their takes on the horse world. You can expect controversy, advice, inspiration, and surely to get your horses feeling fine. Hello, hello, and welcome back. Today's episode is a real treat, if you know what I mean. You probably heard the saying, you are what you eat, and that applies to horses too. Although, sometimes it can be kind of confusing on what we should be feeding our horses because there are so many different opinions out there. Today's guest not only has her opinions, but scientific facts on how nutrition affects the equine body. She's been doing this for a long time, and she helps horses all over the nation. So without further ado, please welcome Audrey McLaughlin with Equine Energy Med. First, I'd love to just get a little bit of history on how you kind of got started in this. I know that you're also a human naturopath, so did you do that first, or what's your history?
Sure. So I did do that first. And in fact, the only reason that I did the equine sort of minor in equine naturopathy is because I have a herd of my own horses. And I was just doing it so that I could better manage and holistically take care of them, right? If it makes sense and works for humans, then like, where else are there gaps? You know, and I do the same thing for my dogs, even though I don't treat anybody else's dogs. But so that's how it started. And then slowly over time, as my kids started competing and we started going and being around other people in the horse community, it sort of started leaking out. And then before I knew it, I was at like 50-50 humans and horses. And now I'm about 75-25 horses to humans. And you know, it sounds terrible, but horses are more fun. It's much easier for me to say, you know what, Morgan, you need to change this, this, and this with your horse's diet, and you just do it. Or this, this, and this with the care of your horse, and you do it, versus if I was like, no more coffee, no more sodas, and you can only have sweets twice a year. And that obviously it's not that dramatic for humans. But then, you know, with humans, there's always some kind of hurdle to overcome, which is a beautiful challenge in some ways, but also it's so nice just to be like, this is what you need to do. And they're like, okay, and then it's done. You know, there's no follow-ups like, okay, I'm still having these symptoms. Well, and I had pizza and beer five nights last week. And I'm like, that could be the problem.
Totally.
Or I forget to take my supplements. Most people, you know, if I say stop giving a horse a supplement or give a horse a supplement, they generally don't forget. It's really very rare.
So I know that for horses, you are a huge advocate for forage diets. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit for maybe people who don't really know what that means, what that all entails?
Sure. So a lot of people assume two different things. Well, there's two tracks people assume about forage. One of them is that forage base, right? Because anytime we start to create a ripple in the marketplace, then companies are smart, they catch on, and then all of a sudden their product is forage based and this product is forage based. And so they say my horse is forage based because there is an ingredient like alfalfa or timothy or something in there, some sort of pelleted hay or beets in their sort of concentrated processed feed product. The other kind of extreme is that people think, well, all we do for forage is just turn them out on grass or just turn them out on a round bale or only feed a baled product. And the reality is that forage is somewhere in the middle. You know, one of my favorite expressions is that everyone thinks they have an exception to the rule, but most people don't. Yeah. Any horse can thrive on a forage diet if given the right ingredients, and those ingredients are a little bit different for every horse. So what we look for is a base in some sort of grass. It can be a baled grass, it can be a pelleted grass. For some horses, even though beets aren't forage technically or grass, sometimes we have to give that kind of natural component to increase protein or nutrient density. And then we have to give them the things that are just missing in forage based on farming practices and differences in what a horse may need based on their work level and lifestyle. So that's where something like an anti-inflammatory fat or a forage balancer would come in. And that forage balancer can be a little bit different depending on, you know, where the gaps in nutrition are.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for sure. So when you're kind of formulating a nutrition program for a horse, what are maybe some things that you would have to consider in that?
So we definitely consider current health status, right? We consider, and that's things like weight and condition, soundness and sameness. And sameness is a big one, right? Because, a lot of people are like, oh, XYZ made my horse hot, or, made my horse slow and lethargic. And so those are the things we have to consider. We have to consider workload. And then we have to consider lifestyle of the horse. So do they live in a stall 12 hours a day? Are they turned out on pasture? Seasonality, is it spring grass that's this tall and full of sugar? Then the other thing that a lot of people don't realize that I consider, because a lot of, if I were to give all these if, ands, or buts on TikTok or Instagram or, any of those kind of short form content areas, it would take a lot of minutes to get through it all. But a lot of people don't realize that we have to take in the owner's ability to do it, right? Their budget, little things like, do they feed once a day or twice a day, or does somebody else, are their horses boarded and somebody else is managing that feed? And so how can we make it the very best, most anti-inflammatory, most forage diet, given all of those things? And so, we determine little things like protein, fat content, sugar content, non-starch carbohydrates, all of those things. And we can make it as clinical and mathematical based, or as general as we want it. And some people want very, they're like, I'm going to buy a milligram scale and we're going to, weigh all of this out. And some people are like, I just need it easy and I need my horses to be sound, right? So it's kind of a balance both ways. I was talking to a client before this and telling her, like, we were discussing how in the US they don't really have to put all of the ingredients. They can do something like proprietary ingredients or and other ingredients. And get away with adding or not adding a lot of different things and feed products and supplements as well. And the difference between your average horse owner like myself and some of the like performance horses, world champion horses that I work with, is that when they see a supplement and they think, hey, I wonder if this works, they say, let's send this off to a lab and see what's in it before I give it to my horse, right? And so it looks like from the outside, and I'm sure there are people that way too. My perspective may be a little bit skewed, but it looks like there are people from the outside and they've got like the Purina patch and they've got the, all of this thing. And so that's what they're giving their horses. But the reality of that on the backside is that they're sending off individual supplements to make sure there's no inflammatory ingredients in it, right? So, there's a wide range of how we can determine and calculate exactly what a horse's needs are and what they get.
Yeah, absolutely. So for young horses who I think this is at least common in my area, where for babies, people aren't really doing much with them, and so they just kind of give them whatever. They're maybe not on any supplements. Is there something that we should be aware of when feeding young horses?
So for any growing horse, right? So we're looking at right about 5 years and under. That's still classified as a growing horse, right? So we're closing up all of those growth plates in their joints and all of that. I really like to make sure that number one, they have a good anti-inflammatory fat, an omega with omega-3s in it. So that could be ground flax is usually that's the easiest for people to find, but it could also be ground chia. And then minerals are really critical for horses that age. Where I'll caution people is if you're using like some sort of packaged concentrated feed, I wouldn't add these things to a packaged concentrated feed, right? Because then you run the risk of going the other direction. And the funny thing about mineral imbalances is that too much of a mineral looks a lot like from a symptom perspective, too much of a mineral looks very much the same as too little of a mineral in a lot of cases.
Interesting.
So it can be difficult to determine which way to go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for
Yeah.
sure. Also, something I've kind of been seeing in my area as an up and coming feed trend is feeding fodder. Do you know much about that? Is that appropriate to add in at certain times?
It can be for some horses. Fodder tends to be higher in sugar. And so we just want to make sure that we're balancing that out. So I would not, so horses are what I like to call super vegans. And so in many breeds, not all, but many breeds genetically just survive better on what we would consider like a really low quality grass or hay. You can think about any of those kind of mountain breeds, Mustangs, any kind of cold weather breeds that we have shipped over to do all kinds of fancy stuff with drafts, they really do very, very poorly on high sugar grass, including things like fodder. There are some horses that, you know, I could make an argument for fodder for, but it really seems to be a lot of trouble. A lot of people do it themselves, and it seems to be a lot of trouble for maybe getting them too much sugar content and causing a whole host of problems.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Thank you for that. Okay. So next up would be supplements. I know this is kind of another whole rabbit hole. We could go way, way, way far down because there's so many different ones out there. And I think people kind of get confused on what really their horse needs. So is supplement like long-term use okay for certain horses? Is it better to just do it for a little bit at a time?
So it depends. I like to teach people that anything outside of grass forage, so including alfalfa and beets, is a supplement, right? So alfalfa and beets, we should think of those like a supplement, meaning we're not going to make those our whole diet. And then, you know, so we kind of go from there all the way over to, like, you know, I talked to somebody the other day, I think they were giving 12 different supplemental scoops of different things, right? So there are some supplements that horses can be on forever, like a joint supplement, especially if it's just something like hyaluronic acid and glucosamine, which I'm a big fan of just giving what we know works and without all the other fluff. We have to be careful when we supplement because a lot of them have either very similar active or inactive ingredients. It's very, very hard to find a supplement that is for joints and only has joint stuff in it. You know, they're always like, oh, we're going to throw some yeast in here. We're going to put some B6 in here. We're going to do all these other things. Which could have a negative or positive impact. But when we stack supplements together, it's very, very easy to come up with imbalances. And I always tell people, my husband would call me cheap. I like to say I'm frugal. But I think that it's really important, not just for your wallet, but for the health of the horse, to test the supplements that you're on. Meaning, if my horse is on a joint supplement, and say he's 15, he could or could not have arthritis, moderate work, then test him off of it for 10 days and see. By day 3, 4, 5, you might know if he needs the supplement or not. And if by day 10 he doesn't, then let's leave him off of it, give him a break for a little while. Just because every little bit that we add on is an insult to the liver, to the kidneys, all of those filtering organs that have to filter it, whether it's good quality stuff or bad quality stuff.
I'm going to take a quick second to talk about Feel & Fine Therapy's new service. You guys know that Feel & Fine Therapy is all about the horse, and we want to reach more horses this year. We've now opened up virtual sessions for those who aren't local to us that you can book with me to get a comprehensive postural analysis of your horse and a detailed stretching and exercise program that will fit into your horse's lifestyle. You can book the sessions now on our website, feelinfineequine.com, for only $50. We can't wait to work with you and get your horses feeling fine.
So definitely double check for overlapping ingredients and then try them on and off of stuff, because just like in the human world, we see, you know, this supplement and that supplement and this supplement and that supplement. And before we know it, we've got all these supplements that a horse is on and we don't know if it's working or not, right? You can't, by the time you get so many, you can't tell. And so it's important to just check and make sure each one. Another consideration is people will, you know, I hear this like in the back at the rodeo arena by the alley all the time. People will say, oh my gosh, you know, your horse is looking great. What do you have them on? And they'll give them a list of things, right? And you can already see the wheels turning. I'm like, I'm gonna go buy all that stuff. A supplement only works if the horse has a deficiency in the first place. And that's everything from vitamin C, like your basic stuff, all the way up to like the CBDs and different things. If the horse doesn't have, for CBD, for example, a cannabinoid deficiency, then you're not gonna see any calming or chilling or pain relief by giving that horse CBD. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that goes for anything. Magnesium. Oh, magnesium made my guy so chill in the alley. If he doesn't have a magnesium deficiency, then you can keep giving him magnesium and it's not going to make him chill, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love the way that you put that. That's really interesting. So for different grains. Are all grains inflammatory in the body? Are there ever any instances where you recommend people feed grains?
I have yet, knock on wood, to have a situation that we couldn't figure out without grain, right? Where we, for the horse's health, where sometimes we get into like, okay, is a little bit of grain all right? Or is a little bit of inflammatory ingredient all right? Is when we get to that end of the spectrum that I was talking about earlier for lifestyle and workload and the ability of the owner to be able to either get the products that they need in order to feed a horse. You know, there's people that like maybe have trouble getting Timothy pellets or alfalfa or an orchard grass or different things. So they don't have access to free choice hay. And so in some of those areas, just to get the caloric density, then sometimes we will do hay, or we will do a grain for that. If we're doing grain, you know, it's really just about, you know, like which one you're making a trade-off anytime you do grain. Grain is made to fatten up cows. It's really not ideal for a horse's digestive system at all. And so at some level, even for a healthy young horse, you're adding some insult to that digestive system that pushes things down an inflammatory pathway. But it's a little bit different for everybody. You know, you can kind of liken it to humans. Like you see people, you're like, she eats brownies every day, you know, eats McDonald's every day, goes to Starbucks every day, does all of these things, and yet appears like sound and fit and happy and healthy and all of these things, right? And so horses are a lot the same way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. So kind of where we were with the supplements, I think, like I said, a lot of people get kind of confused on what their horse needs. And like you said, that it's not going to work unless they have a deficiency. So you do the minerals, metal, and main test. Can you talk a little bit about what that test is?
Sure. So the minerals, metals, and main test. Minerals and metals, main test. I'm like, and. It's a hair test. And it's actually, it was originally designed for humans. And I do use it in my human practice quite frequently, predominantly to find mineral imbalances, digestive disturbances, and toxic metal accumulation. And so the same company that designed and patented that test for humans also did it for horses. Now there are a couple like different ones on the market where they might be using some sort of infrared scanner. I'm not sure about the science on those. This one, they actually treat the hair and they turn it to ash, and then they test the mineral content that is left in the ashes. And that's how they determine the mineral content of the horse. Now you can test all of these same minerals with a blood test, right? And so the difference is that a blood test is a snapshot and for roughly the last 12 hours. And so if the horse, you know, had alfalfa in the last 12 hours, it might show on a blood test, a serum test, that their calcium to phosphorus ratio is off, right? Because just like if I had eggs and bacon for breakfast and went and got my cholesterol tested, it's going to be really high because the blood is the great equalizer in the horse's body and in the human's body. When we're doing a main and mineral test. For that test, we're looking at more like a 60 to 90 day window. And so it really gives us a zoomed out shot of overall how's the horse doing on their nutrition. So I always tell people that the main test is not for an acute issue, right? We need to go to the vet and get a blood lab for that. But it's more for those nagging soundness, sameness issues, hoof issues, you know, performance issues that are chronic and not going away. Inside that test, we see every single mineral, you know, the macro and micro minerals in different levels. And from that, we can look at and say, see what might need to be supplemented, see what might need to be balanced. And there's little indicators we can see about immune function and possible parasitic load and digestive distress based on the relationship or the ratio of those minerals to each other. So we look at the individual levels and then the ratio of them in between each other. The other thing we look at is toxic metal accumulation. And the most common toxic metal accumulation I see is aluminum. And aluminum is kind of funny because you can get aluminum just from the air. But for horses that are on concentrated feed products, that are on like a daily med, like Equiox, for example, for horses that are on a lot of these packaged supplements, whether they be in a pellet or powder, their aluminum tends to be really high. Mm-hmm. And aluminum, like a toxicity of aluminum or even a body burden of aluminum, impacts their immune system. It can lead to colics. We get a lot of periodic lameness, skin and coat changes, and ability or inability to maintain weight. It makes it really difficult for them to maintain weight and size going either direction. So those are mostly the kinds of things that we're looking at with that test.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Do you also recommend that people are testing their hay as well?
It depends. So if you have hay testing can be good, but I usually recommend to test the horse first. And I used to test both for everyone. And we would see, you know, how this hay readout, this hay property, the properties, the nutritional value of this hay is impacting this horse. But over time, we started leaving out the hay test for a couple of reasons. Number one, most people, most horse owners are not buying hay in volumes great enough for hay testing to really have that big of an impact, right? Even here on this property where we have 8 horses, we aren't buying more than 50 or 60 bales a month. And so I go to one supplier, but that supplier goes to lots of different places, right?
Right.
So I could test, pull samples from a few bales, and I might sort of get the right answer. The second part of that is that each horse is different. So you can have 2 horses eating the exact same diet, even from the exact same feed bucket, and they will have different test results because they metabolize things differently. There's genetic differences. If you've ever heard the saying that genetics loads the gun and then lifestyle and diet pulls the trigger, it's the same thing for horses. So just because horse A is getting enough minerals by weight and the hay is appropriate for them, and horse B is getting enough minerals by weight, if horse B is stressy, right, it, you know, is a real nervous, anxious horse, then horse B is going to need more minerals regardless of the amount of minerals in the hay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's more important for the to know how the hay that you're feeding impacts the horse versus testing the hay and just kind of knowing, you know. Yeah. There's a lot you can tell by the look of like a hay to get an idea. Not obviously not individual minerals, but get an idea of whether it's a good quality hay or if it's high sugar hay or that kind of thing. But again, more important in my practice has been how the horse responds to the feed it's given versus the feed it's given. That makes
okay.
sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you yeah. for that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you also do nutrition consults for people, and you have a couple of other services for people who might be interested in wanting to kind of get their horse on a better nutrition path. Can you share what you offer?
Sure, absolutely. So there's kind of 2 pathways. A lot of people jump right in and do the main and minerals test. And that's a really great option if your horse already has, known existing issues. So usually what we do is they order the test, we send a test, and then it comes with a consult when the results come in. Option 2 is just to do a nutrition consult, and it's essentially the same, but without the benefit of the test. And I recommend that for people who are on constant, who already know that the horse's diet needs to change, because sometimes we may not even need to test. You know, we kind of go through a process where we change the diet and then the muddy waters clear and we start to see if there are any real problems with that horse at all, or if they all kind of fade away when we change the diet. And sometimes there's still 1 or 2 nagging problems going on, and sometimes they're like, I feel like I have a new horse, right? So, you know, either one of those options is totally fine. Most people who are not already on a forage diet should probably start by converting to a forage diet. It saves them money in the long run rather than doing the test. And then we convert. And then, like, we might need another test in 6 months, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I do some energy medicine, biomechanics. When I first started, that was probably the heavier part of my practice. Hands-on with horses. And so the way that translates now, since I do so much virtual, is that I have somebody send me a very specific set of 5 photos and usually 2 videos, little short clips, and then I'll mark them up and then I will show them and teach them steps that they can do in order to help that horse on their own, right?
Okay.
So we'll have a one-on-one meeting like this, and then I'll show them steps. Sometimes I send video clips if, you know, if they don't remember, if it's gotten a, if it's confusing for me to explain. And I find that as much as I like to put my hands on as many different horses as possible, I, even when I was doing that, I was still giving people homework, right? Like there was a lot of teaching for, you know, now you have to do this to maintain this for a while, right? And then rather than me coming back every week or twice a week, it makes a lot more sense for me to show you what I'm going to do and you to try to do that, right? And so that it kind of is the best of both worlds when we do it virtually that way.
I have the pleasure of working with many equine professionals in my field. Recently, I've had a new interest in learning about bits and the equipment that goes in our horses' mouths. The equine professionals over at Cavil on Tack are truly one of a kind. They handcraft quality bits, sourcing only the best materials. They put lots of research and time into their designs to make sure that every one of their bits is fair. They maintain affordability by prioritizing their customers over profit. You can trust that when you choose Cavil on, you are getting the best value for your money. Shop now at CavilonTech.com. I know you also have a podcast. Do you want to share what your website and your podcast is?
Absolutely. So you can find me at equineenergymed.com and there's links to all the things there. I do have a podcast, Equine Energy Medicine Podcast. I'm getting to about one episode a month right now. But at some point, hopefully I'll be able to do that weekly. And then on TikTok, I am Audrey_Christie, I believe. And then on Instagram, Equine Energy Medicine, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Y'all need to check out Audrey's services. I did a mane and mineral test for my horses, and it showed me some really crucial information where I was able to just change some simple things around to help in their daily lives. Write us a 5-star review and tell us what you loved most about this episode. Make sure you're subscribed so that you get updated when new episodes drop, and we'll see you next time. Bye!